I like questions. I ask a lot of questions. If you're new here, get used to that. Why is this guy asking so many questions? Shouldn't he just be telling me what he knows? But sometimes questions keep us moving along. Questions are part of relationships. Questions are part of self-awareness. And I usually have a lot of questions when I'm watching a movie or a documentary or a show. And I'm old enough now where I watch 60 Minutes. And I look at these stories and I say, man, these people have faced amazing things and they are heroes and they have faced fear and they have faced war and they have faced sickness and they have faced regimes and they have faced all sorts of things. And yet they push past that and I begin to ask myself the question, what would I do? I begin to ask the question, how would I respond in that very same situation? And so here's a real life example that I think will hit most of us, especially if you are a man in the room. And if you're not quite yet a man, and you're a young man or you're a boy in the room, learn from our mistakes on this. Because there's a very big difference when my wife gets sick. And when I get sick. And you can judge me all you want. You can judge your husband, your roommate, your boyfriend, your son, but ma'am, you have enabled us to live like this. You love having your boy being a mama's boy, but one day you have to hand the baton of that mama's boy to somebody else. And he got really quiet in the room right now. You're like, I'm not ever handing off that baton. Should be lucky to join our family. Let that simmer a little bit. But there's hope. Of course, I love research. So as I'm sitting there and I'm thinking about this analogy of my wife getting sick and me getting sick, I've heard the phrase, the man flu. And why is the man flu so much different than when a woman gets the flu? And it's just become this thing in culture, but it's not just a thing in culture. There is actual science. Let me tell you about it. Dr. Sabra Klein, and not just any hospital in random America. No, from Johns Hopkins University Hospital. Come on, man, you should be really excited right now. She began to prove that this is a real thing. That men, there is hope to why we are such babies when we get sick. And here's what she says. Men have more receptors to certain pathogens. And the research shows that males have a heightened response that summons cells to the site. See, we are getting more sick than you. See, let me finish. Of infection, which contributes to the overall feeling of sickness. You see, everyone, there is science to prove that our man flu is a real thing. You're welcome. We're going to close the Bible. We're going to move forward. Except that's not the full story. Because she also goes on to say, but there are also other contributing factors to why men feel more sick. Like they take too many risks with their bodies. They do not take care of their bodies as well. They avoid healthcare professionals. And most worrisome and the most gross, we don't wash our hands the way women wash their hands. I think that might be a contributing factor to our sickness. So there's full perspective, right? And then I sit back and I watch my wife, who gave birth to 4 children, one of them with no drugs. I was there. She broke my hand in the process. Just joking, she didn't. And I was just like having a great time. This might be too much for some of you, but most of you won't care. She is in the process of pushing out these children. She is in pain, pain that she knew was going to come. For 40 weeks, she knew that pain was going to come. She could not avoid it. And you know what I'm doing? Babe, this is the coolest thing ever. Hold on. And I'm going down. I'm like, they're coming. What I just did, yes, I'm the guy who looked between her legs because I wanted to be the first one to see my child. I'm that guy. But if I were her, I would be get away from me. And my wife's so grace-filled. She had so much. She was just so glad that I was excited to be a dad. But she says, don't ever do this to me again. And then we adopted our fifth child. And so she didn't have the 40 weeks of getting ready for Maxwell, but she had the worry and the fear that somebody else was going to give birth to a child she was going to raise. And what if he doesn't love me? And what if he says those things to me? And what if one day he says the words, you're not my real mom? And here I am trying to get out of bed just because I have the flu. Perspective. She's my hero, and I love her so much. And yet, you put me in that same situation, I'm like, I don't believe in having children. That would be me. But then for us, what happens when we face these challenges? What happens when we face the real challenges of life? Not just man flu, not just getting sick, not just whatever's happening in your family, not just stubbing your toe, breaking a finger. Those are all things that really happen. But what about the issues of life that if we're not careful can truly overtake us? The very things that if somebody looked at you and you gave up on the situation, they would say, oh, it's okay. Because we're expecting the fear. We're expecting the loss. We're expecting the sickness. We're expecting the brokenness. The fact that we don't have money. We're expecting having to file for bankruptcy. All those expectations, it's okay. Life happens. And if we're not careful, we can so easily give into it. And today we're talking about courage and facing the very thing that is attacking us, the very thing that is wanting to overtake us. And courage, courage, the ability to conjure up strength as we face fear, pain, or grief. Courage, the very thing that keeps my eyes locked in a screen when I see somebody else emulating courage. And yet sometimes I wonder if I can do that myself. Courage to watch the superhero. Courage to watch that woman get past whatever circumstances and see her win. Courage to see that young man get past whatever obstacles he had to face, and now he wins. And yet I sit in the comfort of my home on a couch celebrating and giving time and money for somebody else's courage, and yet here I am avoiding the situations of my life. When you have the ability to walk in courage. Quotes like this keep us going. I love it. I'm not going to say it with an English accent, although I really want to. But all men die, but not all men really live. Who said that? Sir William who? Wallace. Braveheart. Or about this one? What we do in life echoes in eternity. Who said that? Maximus. Gladiator. And we're forced to stop when we see these things on a screen. And there's a reason why millions of people love these movies, because it gets us excited. It gives us hope that somebody out there can do. But why does it have to be somebody else? Why can't it be you? Why can't it be you and I? Why can't it be your marriage that survives? Why can't it be you as you're 15 and 16 overcoming all sorts of things in your home? Why can't it be you as a new business owner who's going to make it no matter what happens in the economy? Why can't it be you and I? There really is no reason why it can't be you or I. Except we have to walk through a process of allowing ourselves to face what we're supposed to face. So what does God have to do with all this? What does Scripture have to say about all of this? here we are in this series, and we're diving into the book of Daniel. I really encourage you to go back and listen to some of the messages if you've missed it, but we're going to try every week to kind of bring you up to speed of where we are. And here we are in Daniel chapter 2. And here's a quick rundown of what we've already covered to kind of bring you up. And if you've never read these stories before, it's okay. I want you to really listen and focus. If you've heard them before, I really want you to listen and focus and maybe hear it from a different perspective and have a different lens as we hear these stories. So here's a quick rundown. First, we know that King Nebuchadnezzar is leading the charge of everything that's happening. King Nebuchadnezzar is in Babylon. He's leading the Babylonians. They've taken over Jerusalem. They have taken some of them into slavery. And the second thing we know is there's a select group of young men from Israel who have passed a test in chapter 1. They were the ones taken into slavery. They're now living in Babylon. They're not in their homeland. And they had to pass some tests. And they passed it in a way that honored God. And we know them as Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The third thing we know is not only do they pass the test, but they are found to have favor with God and find favor among humanity, among men at the time. And were added to the king's service as what's called wise men. And the last thing we know as we go into this is this. They have yet to give in, and they do things that and to do things that would go against their conscience. So here you have these people who are now in slavery, have been given every opportunity to do things a way that they feel they shouldn't do it, to have the choice meat, to have the choice wines, to take on a new religion, and they choose not to, and yet see themselves still thriving in a new land, even though they are subjugated to slavery in a whole new land. So here we go. Chapter 2. And here's how I want you to listen to this. I want you to listen to this very much like if you have kids, maybe they're in the kids area, they're being told a story. Let's read this together. We're going to read large chunks of story, and it is that. It is a story in chapter 2, so you can follow along and really understand that we're going to jump into it. Here we go. Daniel chapter 2. In the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. His mind was troubled and he could not sleep. So the king summoned the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. And when they came in and stood before the king, he said to them, "I had a dream that troubles me, and I want to know what it means." Pretty straightforward so far. Then the astrologers answered the king in Aramaic, "O king, live forever and tell your servants the dream and we will interpret it." Follow along. He's had this dream. He's having these wise people who are these sorcerers who know some of the spiritual aspects of the world, and he's wanting them to interpret the dream, and they're saying, "Tell us your dream and we will interpret it." But the king replied to the astrologers, "This is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I will have you cut into pieces and your houses turned into piles of rubble." Doesn't that sound encouraging? "But if you tell me the dream and explain it, you will receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. So tell me the dream and interpret it for me." Kind of reminds me of a meme I saw this week. It's this woman posted this meme and she said, it's a picture of her husband. She says, "There's my husband. He's so full of fear. He doesn't know why I'm mad at him and I want him to figure it out. I'm not going to tell him." So you have these astrologers like, "Wait, will you tell me the dream and interpret it?" "No, I want you to tell me the dream. And then I want you to interpret it." Once more they replied, "Let the king tell his servants the dream and we will interpret it." Then the king answered, "I am certain that you are trying to gain time because you realize this is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me the dream, there is just one penalty for you. You have conspired to tell me misleading and wicked things, hoping the situation will change. So then tell me the dream and I will know that you can interpret it for me." And the astrologers answered the king, "There is not a man on earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they do not live among men. So I hope you understand what's happening here. Along with the dream and wanting somebody to interpret it, he is asking for something that seems impossible. And in their earthly standards as astrologers and magicians, they're saying, nobody can do this but the gods themselves, and they do not live amongst us. The king gets really upset, of course. He's the king. He gets whatever he wants, and yet he cannot get somebody to step in and to do this. And so he sets out the decree that all of the wise men, everybody who works in his court, is going to die unless somebody can actually come through. Now, if you remember about chapter 1, is that these boys from Israel, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were added to the wise men. So they're included in the group of people who's about to die because nobody can interpret the dream. And so they go about telling all the magicians, you're about to die. The king has ordered the decree. Everybody's going to be taken out. And it gets back to Daniel. It gets back to Daniel what is happening. And these men who are loyal to God, who are now in slavery, who are now in impossible situations, find themselves in another impossible situation, and they might lose their life to no fault of their own. They didn't do anything wrong. They've actually done everything right. I mean, have you ever felt that way? I've done everything right. I've tried to do the right things. I tried to go to school. I tried to help people. I tried to serve people. I tried to get involved. I tried to make the world a better place. I give to those in need. I do all the right things. And yet, here I am facing a situation that's no fault of my own. These young men understood it. So what is the rest of this passage, and what does this passage teach us about facing fear? Encourage. Number one is this. We have to face reality. And I know sometimes we don't like reality, but reality really is your friend. You ever have been friends with somebody who just cannot live in reality? I mean, or you raise a child, or you have a parent, or you have a grandparent, or you have a best friend who just cannot face the reality of a situation. And it's delaying the outcome. Daniel faced the reality. See, by the time Daniel hears the news, he knows how dire the situation is. They're trying to survive in a land that is not their own, and yet a decree went out that he cannot control. And he begins to face reality, and he goes back to the other three boys, and he's like, let me tell you what we need to do. So verse 18, he says this in Daniel chapter 2. He urged them, this is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, to plead for mercy from God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. And they begin to settle in to the situation. And I know sometimes in a new year, everybody kind of has this idea that it's a new year, it's a fresh start, we're gonna do all these things new, but you know, your credit card doesn't tell you that. Your job doesn't treat you like that. Your son or daughter who's hooked on some sort of substance didn't say, oh, it's a new year, I'm going to stop. The realities and the pains of our life carry over from one year to another. They're not bound to 12 months on a calendar. They faced the reality of it. But then they quickly went to number two. And number two is this. They expect godly intervention. They expect a godly intervention. So here we go, starting in verse 19. And during the night, this is right after verse 18, during the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. Then Daniel praised the God of heaven and said, praise be to the name of God forever and ever. Wisdom and power are his. He changes times and seasons. He deposes kings and raises up others. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness, and light dwells with him. Verse 23, I thank and praise you, God of my ancestors. You have given me wisdom and power. You have made known to me what we asked of you. You have made known to us the dream of the king. Godly intervention. The first time I ever saw something like this, I was 20 years old, and I was a new Christian. I was a sophomore in college, and I'm trying to figure out this whole God and church thing. Even though I was raised in church, I rejected all of it, never made a profession of faith. My dad was a pastor, and I was the worst person in his church. I sold drugs at church. I did all sorts of things at church. I was so bad that board members would not let their kids hang out with me. That's bad. Church people were like, we love the pastor, don't like his kid. So here I am trying to follow Jesus, trying to understand, do I believe this or not? I believed in the good works my parents did, but I didn't necessarily believe in the God that they followed. And here I am trying to figure it out. And I remember giving my life to Christ or hanging out in a student ministry similar to what we have. And I'm hanging out with a bunch of college age people who are leaders in the student ministry. And I'm at my leader's house, and we were there for a few hours, and then we went on a hike, and we did all sorts of things, and one of my friends lost her keys. So what do you do when your friend loses her keys? You start looking for the keys. You start backtracking and trying to trace your steps, and so we're all doing that. You know what my pastor does? It was the weirdest thing. Now, if you're a church person, you might be like, oh, that sounds pretty cool. I was not a church person. I was like, that is freaking weird. You know what my pastor did? He got us in a circle. We're going to pray to find the keys. I'm like, what kind of sorcery is this? We're going to pray to find the keys. And God's going to show us where the keys are. I'm like, I'm out. I don't want to be in this circle. I don't know what's happening in this circle. But whatever voodoo you're doing, I do not want you to do it to me. So I literally stood out the side of the circle. I don't want to be part of it. And they're all holding hands. Oh, God, show us where the keys are. I'm like, this is stupid. There's not even good science behind this. And he prays. He's done praying. You know what my pastor does? Leaves the circle, walks outside the house, goes to the hiking trail we were on, and walks right to the keys. And I'm like, get away from me right now. I don't want to take the class on that. Whatever you have in your church, that class, I'm out. Weird. And yet, there's an invitation that we hear in Scripture for God to intervene in our situations, even when it came to the keys. God begins to intervene, and we see number three, walk in godly courage. You notice that two of them are about us, and one is about God. One is walking in the reality of a situation. Two is God. Okay, God, I need you to intervene. And then three, it's our job. Once we ask God to intervene, it's still our job to take steps of faith that reflect courage and trust in God. So verse 24. Then Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to execute the wise men of Babylon, and said to him, do not execute the wise men of Babylon. Take me to the king, and I will interpret his dream for him. Verse 25, Arioch took Daniel to the king at once and said, I have found a man among the exiles from Judah who can tell the king what his dream means. And the king asked Daniel, also known as Belteshazzar, are you able to tell me what I saw in my dream and interpret it? And Daniel replied, no wise man, enchanter, magician, or diviner can explain to the king the mystery he has asked about. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. And he has shown King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in days to come. And your dream and the visions that pass through your mind as you were lying in bed are these. And he begins to tell him about the dream in detail. There's 20 verses, just the detail of the dreams. As he begins to take steps of courage, and it reminds you and I that sometimes when something doesn't make sense, it might be the right thing to do. As long as God is leading you, is interrupting your situation to do something that might seem out of the ordinary. I shared this before, best man in my wedding. His name is Chad. He worked for Price Waterhouse, big accounting firm. It's around the country, and he was making his way up after graduate school. And he left working for Price Waterhouse, even though he was on a really great track, to go work for one of our friends as his CFO. And our friend's business was growing. And a few months later, I took Chad out to lunch. You know, we're best friends in college. And I said, hey, how's it going working for our buddy? He's like, it's crazy. I was like, oh, is he a bad boss? No, he's actually a good boss. So why is it crazy working for him? You know, we run a business. You run a church, I run a business. I said, no, I get that. But why is it crazy? He's like, because God tells our CEO things to do, and then he goes and says them out loud. Like what? Every time we meet with the bank, he goes in and says, God told me we're going to do this, and you're going to give me this amount of money. And here I am, a CFO, so embarrassed. This is not how you do business. This is not how you talk to people who have millions of dollars that you need for your business. And yet, you know what happens every time, Carlos? They give us the money. Every time. See, sometimes we just need to walk in something that sounds ridiculous to us, but actually sounds perfectly sane in the eyes of God. That's what walking in courage looks like. And here's how valid and how on point Daniel was. Verse 46. Then, after hearing all of this, King Nebuchadnezzar fell. I'm going to say this word really carefully. Prostrate before Daniel and paid him honor. Some of you just got that. And paid him honor and ordered that an offering and incense be presented to him. And the king said to Daniel, surely your God is the God of gods, and the Lord of kings, and revealer of mysteries, for you were able to reveal this mystery. Then the king placed Daniel in a high position and lavished many gifts on him. He made him ruler over the entire province of Babylon and placed him in charge of all its wise men. And moreover, at Daniel's request, the king appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego administrators over the province of Babylon while Daniel himself remained at the royal court. And you're like, wow, they got into leadership. Wow, they had all this honor. Wow, somebody saw the gifts in them. See, it all turned out for them. And you forget that they're still slaves. You forget that their situation and circumstance didn't actually change. They still weren't home. But even though they're in a situation they don't want to be in, God proves that he is with them. So what does this mean for you and I? See, if we're not careful, we'll hear and read a story like this and we'll celebrate. Oh, look, Daniel and the three Hebrew boys. Yay! And we'll act like we're 8 years old hearing a story for the first time, but we know that's not how life really works. What does it mean for you? It means that if God was with them, and these stories in Scripture help us understand the heart of God and the essence of who God is, do you not know that the same God who was with them is the same God who wants to be with you? The same God who downloaded information to them is the same God who wants to intervene with you? That the same God who called them to be courageous is the same God who will be with you when you are courageous? The story is for you and I as well. And I used to think people who had faith never face these situations because they walk in courage and they're like, yes, we're going to face it head on. You want to know why I thought that? Because my dad's like that. My dad's battling cancer. My dad needs to have a transplant, and he's on a list in Dallas and he can't travel. And I called him. He called me yesterday. We're on the phone. I'm like, Dad, how are you feeling? He's like, oh, I got this and this going on. But you know what, man? God is so good. Man, yesterday I was at a bakery and I talked to this lady and she began to cry and I began to share Jesus and she gave her life to Jesus right there in the bakery. Isn't that amazing, son? And I was like, yeah, but I was calling you about your cancer. Did his cancer go away? But is God with him in the middle of the cancer? What does that mean for you? Why can't we live like this? So here's a few more questions. And I love asking these questions because you're not going to be able to escape them. Here's the first one. What are you facing where you need to allow reality to set in? What are you facing where you need to let reality set in? I'm going to be honest with you. Really, I try to be as transparent as possible. This afternoon, my wife and I get on an airplane, and we're going to Colorado. And you might be thinking, oh, you're going skiing. I wish. You know what Libby and I are doing? As my wife and I prepare for May 7th, and we're going through a transition here at our church, and Pastor John has released the church to be under my care starting on May 7th. Really excited about that. But there's work to do. Work in our heart and our soul and our marriage and our finances, and the leaders of our church, our board and our overseer have asked us to do a lot of work because we want to have a healthy leader. So you know what Libby and I are doing over the next 5 days? We're going to be in counseling every day from here to Friday. Yay! Woo! What'd you do in Colorado? I sat with a shrink. We're doing a marriage intensive. And can I tell you something? I love to be in control, and I don't want this joker to ask me a bunch of questions about my marriage. We're fine. We're 23 years in, been together 24 years. But the truth is, do I want the next 23 to be better than the first 23? But the truth also is, I don't know what he's going to ask. I tried to cheat. Hey, is there any pre-work we should do? Nah, just show up. Oh, man. But if I have to face reality, what's the reality you're having to face? Is it about your finances? Is it about your health? Is it about a lack of relationship with Jesus? Is it about that you know Jesus, but it's not a growing relationship? You know, next week people are going to be baptized and they're going to go public with their faith. What would happen if you are sitting in an audience and you're watching a 15-year-old, 25-year-old, 35-year-old acknowledge their need for Jesus while we sit in a chair and we know it, but we won't acknowledge it? What are we facing? What's the reality? Number two, where are you needing godly intervention? You know, we had the week of prayer a couple weeks back, and it was amazing to see all the prayer requests. I mean, the stack was big. I don't know how big it was, but it was big, and we had the cards spread out. People were praying over them, and I read, I think, almost every one of them and cried. And like, God, the things that some of you are facing with your kids and your business and career choices, all these things. And if you're willing to put it on a card for the people of prayer to pray over, are you also willing to ask God to intervene and to take action on those very things? And the third question is, where do you and I need to walk in godly courage? Maybe we already know what we're supposed to do. It's just a matter of doing it. Maybe we know the right thing, but we're afraid of the outcome. Maybe you're supposed to leave that job, but you don't have the next one quite yet. Maybe you're supposed to have that hard conversation with your spouse or your parents or your children, but you're just afraid of what the outcome's going to look like. What if we just walked in godly courage? Like Joshua chapter 1 says, have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous and do not be afraid and do not be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. And if God is with you wherever you go, maybe he'll just be with you in the middle of the very thing you're supposed to face. Face reality. Just face it. Ask for godly intervention. And number three, what are you supposed to do? How do you walk in it with godly courage and trusting that he is for you? He is Emmanuel, God with us. And maybe we just need to conjure up the ability to take one step, the next step, and he would be with us. We're going to do a closing song, and sometimes when I see a closing song, I see people log off online, I see people begin to leave, but I'm going to ask you to stay because this song actually kind of has an art to it. It's a story that the reality of the things that we face and what it could look like on the other side. What could it look like if we actually face the daunting task? What could it look like if we actually do the very thing we're supposed to do? What could it look like if we cut off that relationship or we stop spending money here or we make this decision in our business that we know we're supposed to make? What could it look like on the other side of our fear? There's hope. There's hope because God is with you. And your situation and circumstance may not change. The cancer may not leave right away. You may not stop being a slave like the stories that we just read, but maybe the situation within the context begins to change your heart and encourage you and bring hope that God is with you no matter who is against you or what is against you. Here's what I'm going to ask you. If you'd be willing to say, this week, I'm going to start facing some reality. This week, I might ask God just to finally intervene. I can't do it in my own strength. Or this is the week I'm going to finally begin to step out and do the very thing I know I'm supposed to do. If you could say yes to any one of those, will you just stand with me today? Yeah, just stand. Just say, you know what? I'm going to face the reality of my situation. I'm not going to live in la-la land. Number two, I'm going to ask God to intervene in my situation. Or number three, I'm going to finally begin to step out. And as you do that, have this heart and this mindset that God is with you and for you. And let's begin to sing this song as our prayer together.